Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning MV Pro call. Today is August 8th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to whatever podcast application you happen to use, subscribing to Motor Vitality on whatever podcast application you happen to use, or by visiting MotorVitality.com, where you can, of course, listen to years and years and years worth of archives. So a couple things. First off, if you happen to be a Culligan dealer, listening to this, we have one more spot available for our installer training beginning August 19th. That will be a Culligan exclusive class. We do have several spots available for our standard, our three-day installer training. That's August, that begins August 21st. The virtual begins August 21st, and then the on-site is 27th through the 29th. The first one, the premium course, the Culligan exclusive, the on-site version of that is the 23rd through the 27th, September 23 through 27. And then we do have availability for open to everybody for our premium course that begins on September 16th with the on-site being October 7th through the 11th. So please let us know if you have any questions or you need anything, or any of those would be interesting to you. Please let me know. I'm going to start the call off the way I do pretty much every week, which is by asking, was there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that is worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with?
Hey, Kelly, it's Scott in Alabama.
Hey, Scott in Alabama. What's going on?
And so I've gotten emails, and I've seen the advertising about the classes, the online classes through WQA that are going to be starting in August. And I believe, Paul, you're going to be training them. And I was asking, is this considered an entry-level class, a continuing education class, or is this a good way to start the certification process? Because I would really like to get certified through WQA, but I don't exactly know how.
Paul Freya, as one of the instructors of that course, I will let you take that one, and then I might add a couple things.
I was going to say other way around, Kelly. As far as the mechanism and so forth, you probably are more familiar with that. I mean, I would say to Scott, good morning, Scott. I would say to you, it's definitely the way to proceed if you are interested in becoming certified, either as a certified water representative or certified water specialist. And there are three courses, each of which is around 15 weeks. You meet 1 hour a week on the Zoom class, and then figure somewhere between a half hour to an hour of homework associated with each class. But yes, I would say that's a great way to proceed. Kelly, why don't you, I mean, you have more awareness of the overall structure of things with your involvement.
Are you joining us while you're working out, Paul?
Yeah, barely working out.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I'm not feeling very energetic this morning. Sorry.
It's okay. No, it's all right. I was making sure that you were okay. It's like,
Are you kidding?
It sounded like you were just super excited about that.
Oh, I am.
Wow,
I can't believe it.
Anybody listening about that, I would concur with what Paul is saying. First off, you know, I mean, certification, anybody who knows me knows, you know, I'm the immediate past chair of the Professional Certification Committee. That's kind of been my passion in the industry, you know, in my involvement with WQA for a long time. And it's because I think that one of the most effective ways to combat the sometimes unintentional misinformation that's out there is through education. And I think as our industry becomes more and more critically important throughout the throughout the country and in fact globally, I think that we need to step up and really pursue that certification. I think that, you know, legislators, as they're determining whether or not it makes sense to use our industry as as alternatives to address infrastructure issues or emerging contaminant treatment issues. I mean, certainly we have the ability with point of entry and point of use to be the primary source or even supplementary treatment source to municipalities. And we can do that so much more effectively and efficiently. And so the more certified personnel that we have and certified products that we have in the industry, I think it just becomes all the more critical. So I absolutely 100% definitely encourage people to pursue that certification. In terms of entry level, Scott, I think you've been in the industry long enough that what you might consider entry level is different than somebody coming from day one. I mean, there's a lot of information, you know, as Paul's saying, the way they have it. I mean, you've got essentially 45 weeks of training. You know, there's three different courses. So you sign up with the first one, which I would say is more of an introduction. And then the second one goes a little deeper, and the third one, you know, goes into a little more. So, you're looking at the better part of a year to pursue that certification, which is as it should be, frankly, because, I mean, it's sort of like a college course. The thing about the WQA certification, the online, you know, the instructor-led classes, I do know you're in a Zoom class with several other people, and you can ask questions in chat, and they go through things. But I also know that the instructors stick around at the end of each hour and with an opportunity for people to go in more depth or ask questions specific to their organizations. You know, as long as you go into it realizing that there are so many resources out there to gain more information, more answers, if you don't understand, because they do cover the material really fast, right? You only have an hour in each class to cover each section. And so there's things that you might get lost on or miss, but there's so many ways for you to pursue the answers on that stuff later. So anybody who's listening to this and to answer you directly, Scott, I would 100% for so many reasons encourage you to commit to pursuing that certification. It really yeah. is more than just letters after your name.
And Kelly, if I can add to that, so Scott, at the end of each class, like Kelly's saying, myself and the other instructors, we stay on, and I've had a number of students tell me the most interesting part of taking the course is the discussion that occurs at the end of each class. Sometimes it covers questions associated with the material we just presented. Sometimes it has to do with material presented in prior weeks. Sometimes it has to do with a challenging situation that someone's facing out in the field. And so they bounce it off of us, and we discuss it. And it's just really, it's been very rewarding to be involved with it. As Kelly said, I think it helps each of us as an individual when we become certified, just as a demonstration of our commitment to the industry. And I think it helps the industry as a whole. The more of us that become certified, it just presents us as professionals. So I would, yeah, I agree with Kelly strongly. It's the way to go. And, of course, there are other methods to gain knowledge. But as far as becoming certified, this is the way to approach it. Thanks.
Yeah. The one thing I will say – Go ahead, Scott. So go ahead.
Well, just as a follow-up, so these classes that are starting, is that a certification class that is starting at
yes.
the end of August?
Yes. Yes, it is.
It's a class to prepare you to then take a certification exam. There is no exam associated with each of these courses. It's to prepare you. It's sort of a prerequisite to taking the certification exam. So the only testing part of it is you have to complete the homework.
And then do you still have to, like, go somewhere off-site and take the test somewhere?
No, that's one of the best improvements that they've had. And it just makes it so much more convenient to take the exam. You can do it in the privacy of your own home. I mean, you'll have to scan the room with the camera to make sure that you're not, you know, using notes or you know,
just somebody in the room with you.
There's somebody in the room or whatever. But no, you are able to do that in the privacy of your home or an office or whatever. So, yeah, they put the test online. I think they are still offering the exam at like the national WQA and stuff like that, but not you don't have
but
to.
No,
go
it's
there
pretty straightforward, Scott. Not that's
right.
pretty That's the easy part, is just taking the exam, so to speak, as far as the circumstances. Yeah.
That is exactly what I needed to know. Thanks, y'all.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks. I definitely encourage you to look into it, or anybody else who happens to be listening to this, I'd encourage the same. So, and as you can tell, I'm somewhat of an advocate of certification in this industry. Okay, so anybody else have anything there? So let's chat for a minute about our or 19 minutes about our topic here. I wanted to talk about referrals, and the reason this came up, I was reminded kind of I actually gave a referral to, you know, it's a little different now that I'm in the role that I am than when I was in sales, but my belief about referrals has not changed, and this, I was reminded about this week, this last week when I had given a referral to somebody, to a different company. You know, obviously we work with a lot of different clients and different companies, and I was given a referral, or I gave a referral to a new client of mine, to a couple suppliers, manufacturers and suppliers, and there was it was very frustrating to me because I actually gave three different referrals. Two of them reached out to my client and had an opportunity to work with them. One of them just didn't meet the needs of this client, though they definitely tried, and I appreciated that. You know, if I give a referral, I don't always, you know, I'm never offended if somebody doesn't use them. I mean, different people have different needs. The other company reached out to my client and really spent a lot of time with them and asked questions, and it, you know, it looks like they are going to be the one that my client is going to use as a supplier. But the other company that I referred is somebody that I really like. I do a lot of business with, a couple different times I had given them the cell phone numbers and the contacts of my client, and they never reached out. They never contacted them, and in having that conversation with my client, they're saying, you know, if they're not going to call me when there's a potential for a sale or for us to do business, how are they going to, you know, are they going to call me when I need something, when I need help, when I have a question, when I need service? And I can't argue with that. You know, that's 100% correct. But then I started thinking, you know, what is it? What does that do to my reputation if this is the company that I'm referring? You know, if these are the people that I'm referring? And it did take me back a little ways to my sales days when the way I viewed referrals. Now, the first time I really started thinking about referrals was when I read Tom Hopkins' How to Master the Art of Selling Anything. And he has a couple chapters in that book on referrals and how to ask for them and how to get them. And I remember when I first went into sales, one of the things Tom Hopkins does is he really kind of gives you some scripting. In this book, he kind of gives you some scripting and some ways to get the phone number. You know, you get people to give you the names and numbers of people that they know. You know, I would encourage looking at it because it is pretty valuable. It is helpful. You can take pieces of that from other things. And I got pretty good at it when I used the script. I got, my customers were giving me phone numbers of friends and family and, you know, just tons of people. And I would call them up. I would say, you know, I'm not going to go into detail on how Tom Hopkins says to do that, but it's very effective. You can actually really get a lot of information from your customers that have purchased something from you, that are happy from you. They're willing to do that. What I found is sometimes I would call up those referrals, call up those cold calls, and, you know, Joe thought you might have some questions about water, and I wanted to see if I could answer them. And a lot of times people were like, no, I don't have any questions. And I just imagined in the tone that they were calling back up Joe, my customer, and saying, don't give my number out to salespeople. I don't want them to call. And so they just felt, I don't know, I was never comfortable, and it sort of established my view when it came to referrals as, you know, just because somebody gives me the phone number of somebody that they know, that's not really a qualified referral. I don't really consider that a referral. I kind of adopted the attitude that I shouldn't just expect people to give me referrals. It's number one, if I got a referral, I wanted it to be qualified. And number two, I felt like I needed to earn them. Because when people ask for my referrals, I'm not just going to willy-nilly give them a name and number because it affects my reputation. It affects my, you know, it impacts me and my judgment. And so that became pretty effective for me as a sales strategy as well. You know, when I was in sales, I would tell customers, even before we talked about products or price or anything else, I would say, look, if I don't have what you're looking for, if the products that we offer do not meet your needs, you know, financially or the needs of treating your water, at the very least, I want you to feel comfortable recommending me to your friends and family. And so regardless of whether you make a purchase from me or my company or not, my goal is to make sure that you feel comfortable recommending me to somebody who might be able to use my services or product, you know? So, I mean, and I would say that from the very beginning. Now, in saying that, because I would tell them my number one goal, I mean, I'd say, yes, I want your business. I mean, I'm not a not-for-profit. At the time I was married, I would say, you know, my wife's real funny about the kids having solid food. So, yes, I'd love to have your business. But if I don't have your business, at least I want your referrals. That's more important to me than getting your business. Now, in saying that to customers, in telling them that it is your intent to earn their referrals from the very beginning, way before you even have the sales presentation, it holds you accountable because now they're watching to see if you are worthy of their referrals, you know, and so you have to wow them with service and everything else. You have to sort of blow them away. Otherwise, they're going to go, yeah, the guy said he wanted my referrals, but there's no way I'm giving him referrals, you know. So it also, when you set the stage, when you go into that first conversation and you talk about referrals and earning referrals and your intent to try and earn the referrals, it gets them used to you asking for referrals so that every time you have the conversation or you're in contact with them later, it's not uncomfortable for you to ask for the referrals. But I think that for me, I found it much more effective to adopt the attitude that they didn't, just because they bought something from me, doesn't mean they should refer me. I mean, and to me, the sales process starts after the install and after they've already paid and everything else. That's where the sales process starts. That's where you get past all the little uncomfortable awkwardness of having to go through that game of you know, trying to get the sale. And then you get to wow them. You get to blow them away. You get to continue to woo them, and that's when they become impressed with you, because now you're treating them with that kind of superb service after you've already made the sale, you know, and that's when you have a right to ask for their consideration or their referrals. And I think it's, you know, if you get a referral, and that's kind of what I wanted to kind of direct this conversation around today is what do you do if you get a referral? Because if somebody trusts you enough, you've earned that referral and it's a quality referral and they trust you enough to put their reputation, their name, their family on the line, then, and you don't follow up with that customer or you don't woo that referral with, you know, with the same quality of service or even better service, you're never going to get another referral from that person who gave you one. They're never going to, they're going to feel burned. And, you know, that is what happened to me this last week. And in fact, I have a meeting tomorrow with the leadership of this particular manufacturer to tell them exactly this, that, look, I'm in a position to, you know, it is what I do, Moda Vitality. You know, we work with clients all over the country, and a lot of times they're new clients, they're new companies, and people are looking at places to source this stuff. And if I give a referral to a manufacturer or supplier and they don't follow up, or they call, or they don't give the kind of service, that has an impact on my reputation. And frankly, it's offensive to me. And so it got me thinking about that. If I'm feeling that way, I mean, first of all, I don't just give names out there. I don't just give referrals willy-nilly. I mean, companies have to earn them. And if I give that referral and they do not hold up to the way that I gave them, you know, they don't live up to the to what I said about them, I don't know. I feel like it makes me look pretty bad, and I'm hesitant to give more referrals to them in the future. So I kind of want to open it up. I mean, that was my take on this. What do you guys think? I mean, tell me your experience. Am I looking at referrals incorrectly? Is there a different way of looking at it? Should I be offended when I give a referral and they don't follow up, or they don't live up to the referral? What do you guys think? Anybody?
Certainly. Hey, it's Paul. I certainly agree with you, Kelly, that it reflects on you or it reflects on me. If we give out a name, I had this happen where a quasi-friend, a friend of my wife's, needed some water treatment at her business, and I gave out the name of a company, and she reached out to them more than once, and they did not return her calls multiple times over a period of weeks, to the point where she finally gave up and had another company put in equipment. So I've certainly viewed it as a bit of a reflection on me that, you know, it's like I'm vouching for them, and then they totally dropped the ball.
So and I don't know. I think it really has to do with the way you see referrals. I mean, for me, referrals were such a critical part of my business. And it did morph because, like I said, if they're the kind of referrals that Tom Hopkins was talking about getting in How to Master the Art of Selling Anything, he sort of referred to referrals as just basically, great segment. Tom Hopkins is one of my favorite sales trainers, a little old school in some things, a little different, but you just can gain so much from his stuff. But a lot of what he talked about referrals were just names and numbers. And I guess if that's all they are, that's not as big a deal. But if you rely on those referrals the way you're talking about, where it's personal, where this is a personal thing, you know, it's not just you being a walking, talking Google search, you know, where you're, you know, hey, who do you recommend for water treatment? Hang on, let me Google this and I'll give you three numbers. That's not the kind of referral we're talking about. We're talking about where you put your reputation on the line, and this company felt they did not follow through. That to me is that's a different type of referral. I thank you, Paul, for that. And so, anybody else? Who else thinks that, or would have an opinion on that?
Hi, it's Michelle. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you go ahead, Michelle.
Just quickly, Kelly, I agree with you and Paul on that. If I recommend and feel strongly about a company or a person that I felt, you know, confident in and got great service or great information, it would not make me happy if I recommended someone to them and they dropped the ball. On the flip
side, let me ask you, Michelle, from a homeowner standpoint, sorry to interrupt you there, but just from a home, because you own a home and you're fairly new in the world, you know, in this world, right? In Paul's, like the scenario that Paul just gave, where he gave a referral, and let's say he gave a referral to you and you reached out to that company multiple times and never called you back, how would that make you feel about Paul, or would you just feel, you know, that some you know, negativity towards the company that didn't return to Paul?
I don't know that. I mean, it depends the length and, you know, what is the relationship I have with Paul, if I met him once or twice, or if it was, you know, more than that. But I just wanted to say on the flip side, as a homeowner, if Kelly, you came in and I was wowed by you and, you know, loved my equipment and, you know, couldn't stop talking about it. And I gave you a friend. I don't like to do that. I've never been one of those ones, you know, that you have the parties and you invite all your girlfriends over to buy stuff.
Yeah.
I'm always hands off on that stuff. But if I were to give a referral, me personally, it would mean a lot if I gave a family member or a friend. And in that case, if the company or the person didn't get in touch with my family or friend from something that I was, you know, had in my house and it was something that they had to spend money on, I think that would make me, in that case, would make me look, you know, for someone that I used personally, if didn't reach out, that would put a couple of, you know, X's on, you know, black marks in my mind about them. So that's what I wanted to say.
You know, and sometimes it's unfortunate because the person that you work with is, you know, maybe they're superb in the company and they, you know, and you refer the other company and maybe the referral you give is outside of the territory and they're assigned to another salesperson who doesn't have the same commitment to service as the salesperson that you worked with, you know, that happens too. But then, you know, that's when I make the call and I say, I don't want to work with that person anymore. If I give a referral, I want this salesperson handling it. You know, but somebody else had a comment there before Michelle popped in.
I was just going to follow up that you have to treat referrals what they are, which is the best lead you will ever run in your sales career. And you have to treat them as such. What I do is if somebody gives me a lead, and I will follow up with them, multiple times, like over a week period. But if I don't reach them, I reach back out to the person
that gave you the referral.
And said, hey, I've reached out to them, several times and I haven't heard back. Usually they get them on the phone and I usually, hear back from them usually that day.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the power of those referral relationships. You know, when I was in sales, I closed at an 80 to 90% closing ratio. And people go, well, that's kind of, you sure? How did you track that? Well, it's because the vast majority of my sales were referrals because I developed them. And it was exactly what you just said, Scott. Sometimes you can go back to the person if it's a legitimate, strong referral. You can go back to the person and let them advocate for you and say, hey, look, this guy's, you know, you asked for a referral. I gave you a referral. This guy's trying to call you. And usually it's not malicious, right? They're, I got busy. You know, it's, but when they realize that the other person is truly advocating, the one who gave the referral in the first place, they will get involved. And you're right. They are the easiest sales to close. They are the highest closing ratio, and they cost you nothing except a desire to help people, you know, to get out there and really serve people. Yeah, you're 100% correct on that. In the last minute, comments here? Yeah, please, absolutely.
If I can, one other thing, sometimes when I give out a referral, I will say to the person, if you have any issue with the company or the person whose name I've given to you, please let me know.
Yes. 100%. And that's and sort of to let them know that exactly, you know, give me some feedback. And that's exactly what I did, you know, the situation that occurred for me this last week is, you know, I asked them, I followed up, you know, how did it go when you called them or, you know, did they reach out to you? No, I never heard from them. We called them several times. Okay, let me reach out to them again and tell you, you know, and I did it again, you know, I gave them another chance. Nobody ever called them back, you know, and it's like, that's not acceptable to me, you know, it makes me not want to ever give referrals back to them. Anyway, we have 9 o'clock here. I appreciate the conversation. Thank you very much, you guys. We will talk to you next week, if not before. Please be safe and have a great weekend.
Thank you.